නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ සෝමනස්සම් අහං ආවුසෝ ද්විධං වදාමි සේවිතබ්බම්පි අසේවිතබ්බම්පි. Dear Dhamma friends, we are discussing Sakkapanya Sutta, which is available in the long discourses of the Buddha. As you all know, in the canon, mainly Digha Nikaya, that is the long discourses of the Buddha, then Majjhima Nikaya, middle length discourses of the Buddha, Kuddaka Nikaya, short discourses of the Buddha, and then Samyukta Nikaya, combined discourses of the Buddha, Anguttara Nikaya, that is the numerical discourses of the Buddha. Likewise, there are five main books are there. So, in which these days we are discussing Sakkapanya Sutta, which is available in the Digha Nikaya, what you call this, second section. So, in that second section, actually Buddha discuss on mainly answering certain questions coming from the Sakka. Sakka is actually the god of the Devas or the lord of the Devas, and mainly staying at Tavatinsa. Tavatinsa is the 33 Devas plane, and there on one occasion he came to visit the Buddha. And I'm not going to explain from the beginning, since we discussed these things already in the last week. So at that time, when he first sent a messenger, that is Panchasika, to discuss with Buddha. And then after Panchasika had a cordial discussion with the Buddha, at that time Sakka arrives. And then he too is praising the Buddha, telling that that because of the rising of the Buddha, now their retinue or their people, the gods, are increasing. And then the asuras are decreasing. So basically there is a kind of opposition between devas and asuras. And according to god Sakka, he mentioned that with the arising of the Buddha, their crowd is increasing while the asuras crowd is decreasing. And again he mentioned about how a particular time one lady called Gopika has given dana, almsgiving, to monks and lot of faithful, and she had a wish to become a man. And then at the end of her life, actually she became a god or celestial being in Tavatinsa with the name of Gopaka. So Gopaka is one of the fairly higher realm god or celestial being, who actually was considered as a son of the god Sakka. And everybody has considered him as a son of the gods, and therefore basically that indicates that Gopika's wish has come true. And again all the wholesome deeds has given her merit fruits on her immediate life, next life. And then there is another story telling that Gopaka has noticed that there are three supporting or servants kind of Gandhabas were there. So they were actually are the ones satisfying the other higher gods with their dancing, music and all these things. And actually he recognized that these three gods are actually monks. So during the Buddhist period. So he was quite ashamed to see these three people here, because she was there as a Gopika, helping these three monks, giving them alms and respecting them. But now things have become completely opposite. changed. Now they are in a way respecting and trying to enjoy this Gopaka. So now he is actually pointing out what they have done, and he is basically arousing some kind of urgency within those three gods. And because they were monks, and but they didn't do their job properly, they were in a way a little careless, and that is why they had to come as servants to this Gopaka. So as a result of that, they two of them actually were ashamed of Gopaka's words, and then they too given up their sensual pleasures and started to meditate. And it is mentioned that they were able to attain non-returner level, anagami. And as a result of that, they were reborn in one of the pure abodes. And then once all these things were discussed, so basically Buddha and the Sakka now already have established a good relationship. And at that time, now God Sakka started to put his questions. So that is the main purpose of his visit. He had various doubts related to certain philosophical ideas, and now, and he himself has reflected about these things, and also have wanted to ask these questions from other recluses, but those were not successful, and that is also explained at the latter part of the sutta. And now he found an opportunity from the Buddha to discuss his philosophical questions. Now he is asking his question, and basically he is starting with mentioning some sort of observation that he made, that all the living beings, basically humans, gods, Gandhabas, Asuras, and many different categories of beings like to stay harmoniously. And they want to stay without any kind of hostilities, and they want to live happily, but it doesn't happen. So what's the reason? And that is the question that God Sakka first asked from the Buddha. And then Buddha mentioned that because of jealousy and avarice, so this peace or kind of harmonious living is not possible. When people are having jealousy and avarice, so that causes a lot of trouble. They start to hate each other, they start to jealous each other, they start to quarrel each other, and all these problems coming to being, conflicts, arguments, etc. coming to the being, because they all have jealousy and avarice in their minds. So that is the answer Buddha gave. And after that, God Sakka asked next question, what is the reason for jealousy and avarice? Then Buddha mentioned, people have likes and dislikes. So their minds are very much sort of conditioned to some things they like, to some other things they don't like, to some people they like, to some other people they don't like. So they have such kind of a preconceived attitude, ideas, so that to something they like and to something else they don't like. So likewise, people have this kind of a tendency in their minds, so that is the reason for avarice and jealousy to arise. The reason is like and dislike. And then God Sakka asks, what is the reason for like and dislike to arise in one's mind? Then Buddha go to a little more subtle level, and he answers chanda. Chanda is the desire. So people have kind of an inherent desire in their mind. So they want to desire for something. So it's a kind of an inherent quality, and they were driven by that desire. So when they are desiring something, they start to like it, they start to don't like it. So likewise, these issues come into being because of the desire. Then God Sakka asks, what is the reason for desire? And then Buddha answer, desire arises because of thinking, vitakka. Now that indicates another very interesting finding here, that a desire cannot arouse without any kind of thinking. So in order for any kind of a desire to arise, or at least to sustain, some support has to come through thinking. So one has to deliberately think, one has to participate in thinking, one has to promote thinking, then only the desires may start to sustain and ultimately grow, and may lead to likes and dislikes, and it leads to avarice and jealousy, and it leads to all sorts of arguments, quarrels, wars, etc. So thinking also plays a vital role here. And then Gotsaka asks another interesting question: what is the reason for thinking? Then Buddha gave a very interesting answer, and he mentioned that there is a tendency to proliferate in the people's mind, beings' mind, so that is why they start to think. So this, there is a kind of a tendency in our minds to proliferate. So therefore we came through with this sort of a diagram last time, that this sutta talks about this kind of a relationship. So there is kind of a tendency to proliferate in one's mind. As a result of that, one is thinking. And as a result of that, various desires are arising, because they are constantly thinking in many directions. And those desires condition the mind, and ultimately they have certain tendencies as like, dislike, and that causes to generate jealousy and avarice, issamaccharya, and that causes to generate lot of arguments, quarrels, disputes, wars, battles, etc. So there's a kind of a sequence here, or kind of a causal relationship here, starting with papancha, or tendency to proliferate. So inherently we have that quality. We can't admire that quality, instead it is causing a lot of trouble. But on the other hand, in Dhammapada, Buddha mentioned papancha abhirata paja nippapancha tathagata. So these all different types of beings are fond of proliferation. They are kind of attached to conceptual proliferation. They are delighted in conceptual proliferation. But on the other hand, Buddhas, Tathagatas, are free from conceptual proliferation. So that is an interesting statement that Buddha makes. So that indicates if one has to follow his path, so his development or his practice has to lead towards that calming down of mental proliferation. So if one's practice doesn't lead to that kind of calming down of mental proliferation, conceptual proliferation, so that indicates one's practice has gone somewhere wrong. So therefore we need to reflect in ourselves. Now I am practicing several years. Is this practice has led me to calm down the mind, to at least minimize inner chatter, rumination, various kinds of unnecessary thinking, obsessive thinking, conceptual proliferation? Is there any reduction in any of these? If they are still continuing to the same level, and you are being completely enslaved to those conceptual proliferations, then that indicates the technique that you are using, or the meditation method that you are using, is not useful. So proper meditation technique has to have the qualities that it should calm down mental proliferation, reduce mental proliferation, reduce inner chatter, rumination, etc. Now, if we move forward in this sutta, now Gotsaka asks a very practical question. Now he's asking, what is the practice a monk has to undertake in order to calm down this tendency to mental proliferation? So that is the key thing that we also need to understand. So what is the patipada? What is the practice to minimize this tendency to mental proliferate? Now there, Buddha start with talking about feelings. mainly there are three types of feelings: pleasurable feelings, painful feelings, equanimous feelings. So for pleasurable feelings, he mentioned, and there are certain pleasurable feelings, those have to be pursued, and certain others have to be avoided. So this is also a very practical point here. So there are different types of pleasures. Say for example, you are going ahead with many people, lot of your friends, and going to a club and having some alcohol, and that also may produce lot of happiness. And on the other hand, there may be another pleasure that you go to a retreat and you stay calm and you keep your mind quiet, and that also produce lot of happiness. So these all are different types of different forms of happiness. So there Buddha mentioned certain types of happiness, sensual pleasures, have to be pursued, and certain others should not be pursued or should have to be avoided. And how are we going to determine whether it has to be pursued or whether it has to be avoided? There Buddha mentioned, now already suppose you have some amount of skillfulness, some amount of wholesomeness, and when you are associating some sort of happiness, if that happiness reduces your wholesome qualities and increases your unwholesome qualities, then such happiness should not be pursued. On the other hand, when you are enjoying certain pleasures, when you are happy, and if that is leading to reducing of or reduction of unwholesome tendencies and improvement of wholesome factors, then Buddha mentioned such happiness has to be pursued. So either to pursue or to avoid depends on whether our inner wholesome qualities increase or decrease, whether our unwholesome qualities factors increase or decrease. So therefore we have to have some sort of introspection, kind of a reflection, to see whether the present kind of happiness leading to further improvement of wholesome qualities in my mind, or is it leading to reduction of wholesome qualities in my mind. So that we have to observe, we have to check, we have to step back and see, now I am continuing this sort of happiness for certain period of time, I am having these kind of pleasures, have it led to some sort of reduction of wholesome qualities, or has it led to improvement of wholesome qualities, has it led to reduction of unwholesome qualities, or has it led to an improvement of unwholesome qualities. So that we have to do some sort of a honest assessment in a way. So we all are associating various types of pleasures. So those pleasures, even though we can associate them, and Buddha mentioned some should be pursued and some should not be pursued, those have to be avoided. So there's another interesting point here. Sometimes people think when you are more going towards the spiritual side, you have to avoid all sorts of pleasures. But here in this Buddha's teaching, it indicates it is not that you have to avoid all the pleasures. Rather, if there are any kind of pleasures which are leading to the improvement of wholesome qualities, no harm in associating such happiness or such pleasurable pleasures. So therefore we need to check and we need to categorize what are the happinesses or pleasures that are leading to improvement of wholesome qualities and decrease of unwholesome qualities. Depending on that, we have to associate such happiness. So similar argument is there for painful feelings. There are certain painful feelings. When you are associating such painful feelings, it may lead to improvement of wholesome qualities, and it may lead to reduction of unwholesome qualities. Then Buddha mentioned, such painful feelings better associate, better pursue. On the other hand, there are certain painful feelings. When you are pursuing them, it causes to reduce wholesome qualities, and it causes to improve unwholesome qualities. Then better stop. Say, for example, now you are practicing Anapanasati, and your body is giving some aches, and you are not comfortable with the posture, and sometimes it is not that interesting, because at the beginning the body doesn't give enough support. And as a result of that, you feel little unhappy, and you again feel that still my objective was not successful. So you have some sort of inner unsatisfaction. Now, how are you going to determine? Now, there is kind of an unsatisfaction, unhappiness, but this unhappiness does not lead to any kind of a improvement of unwholesome qualities or decrease of wholesome qualities. But on the other hand, so if you bear this pain, or if you bear this discomfort, it may lead to further improvement of wholesome qualities and decrement of unwholesome qualities. So likewise, there are certain endeavors that sometimes we have to go through, have to undertake, and while we are going through those, it produces some sort of pain, probably even unsatisfactoriness, little bit of agitation, little bit of frustration. But by seeing the big picture, by seeing the future objective, seeing the future benefits, one has to endure those and has to continue one's practice. Similarly, suppose that you are continuing a practice and you are diligently practicing, but still there is no satisfactory results. So that also produces some sort of hesitation in the mind, sometimes some sort of sorrow in the mind. So that is also possible, because you have high hopes, none of them were fulfilled. You are practicing to attain Sotapanna, but not yet. So likewise, you still have some sort of a domanasa, some sort of unsatisfactoriness in your mind. So that kind of unhappiness is better pursue, because it will lead to improvement of wholesome qualities, because these whatever the supreme objectives are not fulfilled, because the necessary qualities are not yet developed enough, not yet cultivated enough. So that we need to understand. So if we endure all this unhappiness, if you endure all these little frustrations, then one day we will be able to fulfill our qualities, and as a result of that, the mind become calm, serene, happy, all sort of benefits will be available. And on the other hand, assume that you are going through certain kind of unhappiness. Suppose one of your supporters or one of your loved one has passed away, but now you are thinking about him, thinking about her, and lot of pain arising in your mind. Again and again, tears are coming, you are sighing, and lot of pain, despair, sorrows, lamentation are available. Now, are you going to pursue this kind of painful feelings? Is there any benefit? Now we need to reflect according to this Buddha's teaching. So Buddha mentioned here, if any kind of painful feeling while associating, if it is leading to the improvement of unwholesome qualities and decrement of wholesome qualities, don't follow it. Just avoid it. So therefore we need to honestly recognize any kind of a pain that we are going through, if it is leading to the improvement of unwholesome qualities and decrement of wholesome qualities, we better stop as quickly as possible. Similarly, Buddha mentioned there are equanimous feelings, and some need to be pursued and some have to be avoided. Certain equanimous feelings, when you are associating, that actually lead to the improvement of wisdom or any kind of wholesome quality. So then that better pursue, and again it lead to the reduction of unwholesome qualities, then better it pursue. On the other hand, there may be certain equanimous feelings, when you are associating such, it leads to the improvement of unwholesome qualities and decrement of wholesome qualities, then you better avoid such equanimous feelings. Say for example, you are practicing Anapanasati and your breath has completely calmed down and you don't feel much pressure, and maybe you don't feel much pain as well. Your mind may be staying in a kind of an equilibrium, fairly equanimous. But if you continue such equilibrium, such equanimity, so that has a potential to arouse a lot of other good qualities. Say equilibrium of this equanimity is one of the very good foundation for the arising of wisdom. So as a result of that, you have to associate such equanimous feeling. On the other hand, suppose you are dealing with certain friends and they are quite drunkards, and they are doing various bad things, but you are not supporting them and you are also not delighted with them, but you are associating them. Probably you have to check, is this kind of equanimous feeling that I am keeping in my mind while associating these people, is it leading to any kind of improvement of wholesome qualities or decrement of unwholesome qualities? Or is there any tendency that because of this association, because of this equanimous feeling, probably in the future, I also might be driven towards them. I also might get adapted towards their various kind of bad habits. So by seeing such danger, one better avoid such equanimity. So likewise, we have to practically recognize what are the pleasurable feelings. Those are helpful, beneficial, leading to improvement of wholesome factors and decrement of unwholesome factors, and accordingly we can associate them. Similarly, we have to recognize what are the feelings, either pleasurable, painful or equanimous, what are the ones leading to the decrement of wholesome qualities and increment of unwholesome qualities, and we need to avoid them. Now, after mentioning that, Buddha further mentioned very interesting point here. And when Buddha mentioned, and even among these pleasurable feelings or happy feelings that are to be pursued, there are two categories again. And some actually involve with some kind of thinking, pondering. While thinking that you are enjoying certain kind of pleasure, and it also generates some kind of, wholesome qualities in the mind. Say for example, you do metta bhavana, and while you are doing loving kindness, so there is a lot of pleasure available in the mind. Your mind is improving the loving kindness quality. It is quite uplifting, and it reduces hatred in the mind. So it is quite positive. So you have to pursue that. And on the other hand, suppose you are practicing Anapanasati. So when you are practicing Anapanasati, at one level, say your complete thinking has completely calmed down, completely stopped almost, and there is no any thoughts at all in the mind, and your mind is completely serene, and you are going through kind of a bliss. Between these two states, both are pleasurable, both are blissful. Which one is more sublime? So that is the answer Buddha giving here. And there Buddha mentioned, the one without any kind of thinking, and that is more excellent. So therefore we need to understand there is in happiness also there are two sides. Actually this happiness is leading to improvement of wholesome qualities, decrement of unwholesome qualities. That is why we are continuing or associating, pursuing this happiness. And there are two levels. And one level is accompanied with thinking and pondering. The other one is not involved with thinking and pondering. It is calming down thinking and pondering, reducing thinking and pondering. In that difference, Buddha mentioned that second, that latter, is the one more serene, more important, and more excellent. So there also you can understand, so the mind has gradually come to kind of an stillness, inner silence. So if we simply consider only the pleasurable feelings, happy feelings, and first of all we understood, okay, these are the ones better to pursue because it leads to improvement of wholesome qualities and decrement of unwholesome qualities. So you continue those such pleasurable feelings or happy feelings, no harm. And you have given up the others, those you understood that those are leading to the improvement of unwholesome qualities and decrement of wholesome qualities. So you have discarded them. Now you have selected only the proper pleasurable feelings, happy feelings. Now while you are continuing with them, there also you have to make a kind of an improvement. Now how to calm down pondering, how to calm down thinking, and to make the mind fairly quiet, silent. So therefore Buddha is leading us to this reduction of inner chatter, reduction of conceptual proliferation, and ultimately the mind become completely still and free from thinking. So that on the other hand we can say now the thinking has stopped, therefore no possibility of mental proliferation. There is no possibility of continuation of various desires, no continuation of likes and dislikes, no continuation of avarice and jealousy, no continuation of any kind of wars, disputes, arguments, etc. Because we have calmed down the mind, thinking has stopped. So similarly, Buddha mentioned, between the painful feelings also, now you are pursuing with certain kind of painful feelings, you are bearing certain pains, you are bearing some amount of uncomfortable situations because you understood those are profitable and it leads to the improvement of wholesome qualities, it leads to the reduction of unwholesome qualities, that is why you have selected them and now you are associating them. And as you are improving, as you are going forward, you need to understand, okay, how to calm down the mind. And there are two possibilities: while thinking, to continue this painful feeling, or to keep the mind quiet and continue with this painful feeling. So there also Buddha mentioned the quietening of the mind, calming down of the mind, silencing of the mind is the most sublime. So there also now you are going through certain kind of maybe little frustration, maybe little unsatisfactoriness, painful feeling, but the mind is quiet. And then related to the equanimous feelings also, Buddha mentioned that these two types are there. There may be equanimous feelings which are involved with thinking and pondering, which also leads to the improvement of wholesome qualities and decrement of unwholesome qualities. And again there are equanimous feelings generated while keeping the mind quiet, silent, and also helping to develop wholesome qualities and to reduce unwholesome qualities. So there are also Buddha mentioned the equanimous feelings free from thinking and pondering, that is the most excellent. Just to take an example, suppose if we consider about say jhana, the first jhana is involved with very subtle form of applied thought and sustained thought, vitakka and vichara. But that is, we can't say as thinking. I'm just giving an example. But if you are to go to the second jhana, so that is free from even such kind of little agitation in the mind. This vitakka and vichara, applied mind and sustained thought, generates some kind of an agitation in the mind. So if you are to progress in the path, you have to stop that. You have to keep the mind fairly calm, silent. So as a result of that, in the second jhana, both these factors, vitakka and vichara, are free. You have to abandon them. Similarly, say for example, you are doing walking meditation. While doing practicing walking meditation, say you are now continuing with some noting, labeling. You are keeping your left leg and you are mentally noting it as left. You are keeping your right leg and you are mentally noting it as right. Left, right, left, right. So you are improving your mindfulness and properly you are keeping your attention and you are now able to accurately aim your mind. So likewise, you are improving many wholesome qualities with this exercise. So you are continuing your practice. But some amount of thinking is involved. So that is the labeling, that is the noting. So your mind is somewhat agitated at this level because your mind is constantly involved in the process by participating and making a note as left or right. But later you need to understand, okay, now mind has fairly calmed down and it doesn't wander. Now it stays with the object. Now it doesn't want to go here and there. It likes to stay with the object, primary object. Now we got to stop labeling. So this is where Buddha mentioned here. So now assume you are able to continue your practice without any kind of noting or labeling. You are silently observing. Your left leg is moving, if it is touching and it is experiencing a lot of sensations. But mind is quiet. No labeling, no noting, no left right, no lifting moving or lifting moving placing. So there is no any such words are being used. So mind is utterly quiet. It has become a very silent observer. So there also we can recognize it is more excellent, more sublime, more advanced than the previous stage. And say you are practicing Chitta Anupassana and you allow your mind to freely wander because you are quite confident that you can handle it. You are not going to be a victim of mental proliferation because you already came through some amount of practice. You went through Kaya Anupassana, you have developed fair amount of mindfulness, concentration, wisdom. You went through some amount of Vedana Anupassana. As a result of that, you were able to improve mindfulness, wisdom, concentration. And now you are observing the mind. And there you are keeping your mind fairly relaxed and allow the mind to wander if it likes. And now assume that there are various thoughts arising and you are clearly recognizing this is a lustful thought, this is a loving kindness thought, this is a renunciative thought, this is a jealousy thought, this is a kind of a miserliness, or this is a kind of a frustration, this is a kind of a restlessness. So likewise you are recognizing either wholesome or unwholesome thoughts, mind states, then and there. So as you are continuing like this, still mind is involved with some amount of thinking. So therefore, even though mindfulness is present and fairly strong, still you don't experience complete silence of the mind. But because of this exercise, since you are not promoting any of these thinking, either wholesome kinds of thinking or unwholesome kind of thinking, you are not promoting any of these sides. You are non-judgmentally observing. As a result of that, this thinking starts to reduce. Now the thinking doesn't go for a long time. Thoughts are arising and quickly fade away. Another thought arising and quickly fades away. So likewise, your mind now start to experience some sort of a calmness, peacefulness, spaciousness, because less thinking, less thoughts. And you may able to experience some kind of a gap between two thoughts. And you are observing them and observing that gap. As a result of that, that gap starts to increase, enlarge, prolong. Now you are experiencing kind of a quietude which is completely free from thoughts, no thinking at all. At the beginning, probably you experienced that for 1 minute. But due to continuous practice, now you can experience it for 5 minutes. Now you can experience it for 15 minutes, no thinking, no mental proliferation at all. Mind is completely quiet. So now you are experiencing inner silence. So that is more sublime, more excellent, and that may be quite equanimous. And Buddha mentioned that equanimity is worth associating, worth continuing, which is free from any thinking, therefore free from any mental proliferation, free from any desires, therefore it is reducing likes and dislikes, those were latent in the mind, and those further leads to avoid any kind of jealousy and avarice. As a result of that, now the quarrels are reducing, now the disputes, arguments are reducing. Now you can see some sort of practical instructions are here, and I like to show you it in a diagram. So in this section, Buddha talks about feelings, and feelings are of three types mainly: happy feelings, unhappiness, and equanimity. And there Buddha has mentioned certain ones are to be pursued and certain other ones have to be avoided. And among this, so you are recognizing what are the ones need to be pursued, because when you are pursuing them, you understood that your wholesome qualities are increasing, unwholesome qualities are decreasing, so you have selected them. Now you are continuing, and you are continuing certain happiness, and you are associating certain unhappiness, because it leads to reduction of unwholesome qualities, improvement of wholesome qualities, and again you are associating certain equanimity, because those lead into the improvement of wholesome qualities, decrement of unwholesome qualities. And when you are continuing in this process, now Buddha has given the second stage. So that is to further calming down the mind. How to reduce thinking and to keep the mind quiet when it is necessary. And this kind of practice, Buddha say, leads to the calming down of mental proliferation. So therefore we can understand, it's a very interesting and very practical approach that Buddha preach here. In order to avoid mental proliferation, and Buddha has given a complete methodology here. So we can discuss it further in our discussion. And now I stop today's session, wind up today's session. Now I like to answer any questions related to today's Dhamma sermon, or if you are having any questions related to your practice.
Thank you, Bhante. Sadhu. So one of the questions that we received is, Dear Bhante, in simple terms, practicing doing nothing lead to summon the mind, stillness of the mind. Is that what we have to achieve?
It also has a value. That's what I want to mention. And between thinking and calming down or silence, Buddha mentioned, this silence is more excellent. So that is the, in a way, one message available in this sutta. And if we refer another sutta, that is Vitakka Santana Sutta, so there Buddha mentioned, so one has to have some sort of a controllability of the mind or governability of the mind, when it is necessary to think, when you understand there is an advantage in thinking at this level, there is a need of thinking, there is a need of planning, projecting or reflecting about something happened in the past. If there is a need, if there is any kind of a valid reason, then you can do it mindfully. And once you have done that, you still have to have the skill to completely calm down the mind. So in other terms, what Buddha mentioned there is that we have our mind working under complete control. So the thinking doesn't make us enslaved to it. Rather, we do thinking based on any kind of a benefit. We have seen certain benefits are there at this level. If I think, suppose you are going to some work, and at your workplace you have to plan something, you have to design something. You have to, in order to design it, probably you have to gather certain information, you have to do some statistical analysis. So that also may involve certain amount of thinking. But you understand it is necessary for this task, so you are doing it. But you are mindful while you are doing that. Suppose now you have completed your task. At that time, one should be able to completely calm down the mind. Again, you have regained that inner silence. So therefore, Buddha mentioned here an interesting term called vitakka vasita. So you are a kind of mastery, you are a master in thinking. It doesn't mean that you are master in too much thinking. Rather, you are master in thinking in the sense when it is necessary you properly think, correctly think and get its benefit. And when you don't need, you are able to completely stop thinking and keep the mind completely silent. Yeah.
Thank you, Benji. And here's another question that I received. It's quite long, so maybe I will break them into different paragraphs. So, first paragraph, dear Bhante, about 2 years I observed that it's less about sensual pleasure than about sensual experience. The senses don't anymore give me the pleasure they used to, but I still need to experience the senses as a way to feel alive and fill emptiness, maybe. For example, I'll have a cup of strong tea, not due to thirst, and not because I especially like the taste of it, but because the sense experience is stronger than with water or with a weaker tea. Respected Bhante, is such a difference between craving for sensual pleasure, RESP, craving for more sense experience?
Yeah, that we need to honestly check. I mean, suppose now you want to have a cup of tea. Is it driven by some kind of a craving, or is it sort of a necessity at the moment I have? So if having this tea, if my mind get further uplifted, I get some enthusiastic and some vigor is there because of having a tea, having a coffee, and so that I am able to further practice today. Suppose now you are say at around 1 p.m. so you feel little lethargic, you feel little drowsy, and assume that you are taking a tea or a coffee, so that makes yourself somewhat motivated, uplifted, so that you can continue your practice. So at that level, better to associate that feeling, because you know that there are benefits in this. It's true that while you can enjoy that tea, you can enjoy that coffee, it's a pleasurable feeling, doesn't matter, but there are benefits. By seeing that benefits, you continue with that pleasure, no harm. On the other hand, suppose now you are doing well and there is no any kind of a need of any difference, mind is also calmed down, quite uplifted, And now if you are going to drink a coffee or tea, that you need to check, is there any benefit? What is the reason for me to have a tea now? Or you already had the tea. So likewise, you can rationally think, so is it really necessary? Or am I simply driven by the desires? So at that level, you can recognize, okay, if it is driven by a desire and there is no real need at the moment, mind is also not lethargic, it is quite uplifted, so no need. So likewise, you need to decide whether to consume or whether to avoid. And likewise, we have to actually, it depends on the situation. And again, on the other hand, I am not telling that we have to be extremely strict. Because if you are strict too much, then that also doesn't lead to smooth development of the mind. There is an interesting sutta called Oghatarana Sutta. That is the very first sutta in the Sangyutta Nikaya. And Buddha mentioned appatittham anayuham ogam atari. Appatittham anayuham. Appatittham means that he hasn't stopped. Anayuham, he hasn't struggled. So without stopping, without struggling, he has crossed the ogha. Ogha is the, we can say, the defilements. So in order to completely uproot defilements, the path Buddha has taken is kind of a middle path. So he hasn't completely stopped. So that is the complete gratification of senses. Kama sukali kama yoga. Complete gratification. You are completely enjoying the senses. So there you basically stop. On the other hand, so one can go to the other extreme. That you are struggling too much. You are not even giving a tea. You are not even giving a little nap sometimes if it is necessary. You are not giving enough food to the body. You are not giving enough sleep to the body. Because you are too much struggling. You are in a way going to kind of another extreme. You may be in a quiet rush, in a real hurry, and impatient. And you are in a way kind of self-torturing. So that is the struggling part. So therefore Buddha mentioned, so he has gone through to the other shore, not by stopping, by gratification of senses, or not by self-torturing, by excessively putting effort. So he has found the middle path. Through that middle path, he was able to cross the defilements, so the cross the inner conflicts. So therefore, we also have to go in such kind of a path. So therefore, we can't completely neglect the body, completely neglect the necessities of the body. So we have to look after the body. At the same time, we should not stop there, and we have to make use of the body and to continue the practice. Yeah.
Thank you, Bhante. And the next paragraph says, also I have food fantasies, though I know that actually consuming that food doesn't give any more the pleasure it used to give. Still, such fantasies and pretty strong craving can arise. This doesn't make sense to me, as the pleasure part is close to nil. It's as if I haven't yet assimilated or accepted that this source of pleasure is no more available. This craving also produces a lot of papancha, which is no good. I'm speaking of the five bodily senses. Please, respected Bhante, can you comment? Thank you. I don't want to spend a next life as a lower deity fanning a higher deity, nor as a higher deity being and by our lower deity. Thank you for pointing
yeah.
at this
point. Yeah. Yeah, interesting. So actually you have, I think, written the answer. So there you understood, okay, there are kind of a desire and that leads to mental proliferation, and really there is no need to have consumed this tea or what kind of a food, any kind of a food. So there you honestly have to understand, so this mind has such tendency. So we have kind of an inner desire, inner inclination towards some kind of a food, some kind of a tea or beverage or whatever it is. So when you are allowing the mind to think about it, it can even lead to fantasy, it can lead to kind of mental proliferation. So if we are able to understand that, that itself is a really good understanding, really good wisdom, because previously we were not able to understand such inner tendencies or latent tendencies. We simply were victims of those inner tendencies. Those tendencies were there, they come to the surface, and we simply follow them. We simply satisfied them, gratified them. And so we are going on and on. But now we have mindfulness, so we are able to recognize this inner urge. That's a kind of an urge coming from the mind to do something, or to consume some sort of a food, or to drink some kind of a thing. So this is a kind of an inner tendency, latent tendency, kind of an urge coming from the mind. So if we are able to recognize it, and if you understand very well, there is no use of pursuing it, and it is harmful, there is no any benefit, then better recognize it and let it be and let it go. Because if you try to suppress it, that is also not the proper path. Basically, you have to give some freedom to the mind. Then only it will show ourselves what are still the latent tendencies available, these subtle defilements available. So if you keep kind of a crushing kind of attitude, very stressful attitude, very strong attitude, you are completely willfully hold in the mind, then those subtle tendencies, subtle desires does not come out. But if you are keeping your mind completely free, and you allow it to wander, but at the same time you are maintaining fair amount of mindfulness, and you already did fair amount of practice, as a result of that you are quite confident that you have fair amount of mindfulness, wisdom, clear comprehension to recognize these subtle defilements. So at that time, better allow them to come to the surface. There you honestly recognize, okay, this is a desire. This is a kind of inner tendency I have to a certain kind of food. Previously I was consuming them and maybe deriving a lot of satisfaction, but now it is not that much, but still the tendency is there. But now you can stop it. Stop it in the sense, now you are not pursuing it. Desire is there, you are recognizing it, you allow it to be, you are not trying to chase it away, but you are not pursuing it. That is the most important thing. Desire is there, but you are not pursuing it. As a result of that, what happens? That desire start to fade away. Next time when the same desire arises, it may not grow to the same level, because it is not properly rewarded when it has come in the previous occasion. When you are rewarding only, the next time it becomes more stronger. But if you are not rewarding, if you are simply recognizing it, you are being quite mindful about it and let it go, then it becoming weaker and weaker. So that should be the approach that we have to follow. Okay.
Thank you, Dante. I'd like to invite you to the next question.
Yes, thank you. My question, Dante, is that we are now lay people, so we are faced with a lot of ups and downs in our lay life. So you brought a example where if you lose a loved one, you know, of course, the average person will have sorrow, lamentation, and so forth. So that is a very difficult thing to stop thinking about, isn't it, Bhante? That was one of my questions. I mean, how do we, if you lose a loved one, you can't just say not to think and keep quiet. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, I agree. So, I mean, we can't definitely stop crying, maybe stop lamentation immediately. Actually, it depends on how mature we are and how mature we are in our spiritual development. So, say for example, even when the nephew of Vishakha has passed away, and she was crying. she came to the Buddha and she was telling that this nephew has passed away and she was quite helpful to me. And she was crying and complaining to the Buddha. And then Buddha asked, would you like to have many nephews? All these kind of whole Shravasti, if you like to have such nephews, yes, why not? Then Vishakha, you have to cry every day. Every day, at least one of them may die. So then she understood, yes, Panthe, I understood the point. So likewise, even when people have attained Sotapan, Vishakha was a Sotapan, a stream winner. She also was crying. So therefore, that we need to understand. So one can't come to a perfection immediately. So you have to give some time. You have to have some amount of self-compassion that the mind is doing something wrong. We understand it quite wrong, no use. But still, mind is not mature enough to avoid it, stop it. So let it cry. Now I know he has passed away. There is no use of crying. There is no benefit for me or to him in this crying. But mind is crying. If you completely suppress it and stop it using the willpower, that is also not the proper approach.
Yes.
So you are let it cry, but you are continuously keeping some amount of awareness, some amount of wisdom. You are completely slowly improving. You are trying to convince the mind there is no use. You are not going to get him back. And from your crying, your lamentation, he is also not going to benefit at all. And you are getting weaker and you can't satisfy the other's needs. Other children are there, your husband is there, your wife is there, your workplace is there for you to work, you have to look after, there are a lot of other responsibilities. If you spend your life like this, you can't satisfy all of these. So likewise, you are sort of convincing your mind that there is no use of this crying, lamentation. So likewise, you have to do it you have to do it gradually. Then once the mind is understood, it may stop. So it depends on how long you are practicing. It depends. So for a good practitioner, so they have developed fair amount of resilience. So it is not that the troubles or such calamities does not come on their way. They also come, but they can quickly recover. That quick recovery, sometimes we call as resilience, is very high in a person who has developed the practice to a fair amount, to a higher extent. Yeah. So that is Buddha mentioned, so that one can measure one's practice, whether one has fairly developed or whether one is simply a beginner, just by how mind is reacting to these kind of troublesome situations. When things are going really well, it seems like everybody are arahants. There is nothing to cry, no problem, everything's very well, everything is satisfied, you are having good food and your body is also quite healthy, no problem. But in order to understand the spiritual maturity, the troublesome situations have to happen. Certain difficult situations have to happen. That is what Buddha mentioned. So how one is sort of handling such a difficult situation? So that is one criteria to measure one's stability of the mind.
Yes, Bhante. So what I'm understanding is that the higher level of attainment, from Sotapanna upwards, those are the ones who are going to be at peace, who have a calm mind and still mind. We can have moments of good peacefulness, stillness and so forth, but that is not the same as if you go into one of the levels, other levels, spiritual gaining levels. Would that be right if I said that?
Partly, maybe. That's why, that's what I mentioned. That those Sotapanna, Sakadagami, those are the, we can say, the main milestones. So, but still, if one is practicing Vipassana, so fair amount of maturity is available with him. So, So we can't say that only when you reach, I mean, it's true. I mean, when you reach an unreturner level, then only you are free from sorrow and lamentation, because yes, hatred is not there. Yeah. So,
but from what your examples, Mante, a lot of your examples, I may have got it wrong, but tell me, it's a lot, depends on our meditation, because even the examples you took of Anapanasati, Metta, Bhavana and Bhakti meditation, all that. That is all, we have, from what I'm hearing, we have to develop more and more that way, and then only we are able to put it into practice in daily life.
No, actually I have taken easy examples, because I mean most of the crowd is to the practice, but on daily activities also there may be situations. Suppose you are, say you are going through news, you are reading news. And why are we continuously reading news? Why are we watching movies continuously? So it is deriving some kind of satisfaction. It is deriving some sort of happiness. But we need to see. I mean, is it really useful? What is the ultimate result? So is the mind going to develop further agitation? Further kind of, say, collapse in the mind? Or is it mind going to uplift it? So is it going to really enhance the spiritual qualities? So likewise, it is not only for meditation, but even whatever the daily activities that we are involved with, we can see whether is it beneficial, whether is it helping to improve wholesome qualities, or is it really detrimental to the wholesome qualities. So likewise, we have to see, I mean, it is not only for feelings, I mean, even say, you are associating certain people, your companions. So with that association also we can see, I mean, is this association really beneficial? Is it really help me to develop the spiritual qualities, inner good qualities, wholesome qualities? Or is because of this association, am I going in the wrong direction? I was faithful, but now faith has reduced. I was with, say, practice, now the practice has reduced. I have a fair amount of confidence in the Buddha, but now it has reduced. Then better avoid such association. So likewise, so it's a kind of a general rule we can say. So we are measuring whatever the activity, depending on whether it is beneficial and it is useful for the development of wholesome qualities, or is it happen in the opposite. Depending on that criterion, depending on that verification, we have to pursue that association, pursue that task, or else we have to avoid. Actually, more information is available in this sutta, and Buddha mentioned that, but I didn't have time to go to that part. Next time we can come further, because God Sakka further asks more and more questions, and Buddha further elaborate depending on the same principle. Buddha further explains, actually.
Yeah, but the point I was trying to make, Bhante, is that the more we practice the meditation, do we then improve in tackling the daily issues as well? That was the point I was trying to make.
Yeah, it has to be. It has to be. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise, mm-hmm. otherwise it is not practical, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Because, yes, I mean, that is true.
Yeah, suppose because of your practice, now you can't properly involve in with your office activities. Suppose you are doing something good, you are not doing something harmful to yourself or someone else. Now you have assumed that you are doing some teaching, for example.
Yeah.
And because of your practice, if you find that you can't teach, you can't do your job properly, then something wrong. But on the other hand, because of your practice, if you find out now you can do your job properly, I'm not getting frustrated, I'm not getting stressed out, even when someone is looking down me, I'm able to maintain stability of the mind. So there are ups and downs in my job, still I am able to maintain stability. So that indicates that your practice has really helped you in the whatever the activities has said. So therefore, we should not see our practice completely separate from our life or completely separate from our ordinary activities. So whatever the ordinary activities that we are involved with has to be properly managed because of the practice.
Yeah, I know. So lots of people contemplate more than meditate, Bhante. And I presume the contemplation is also vipassana, and that is also beneficial.
Yeah, that is the point actually Buddha mentioned as the second point, that
right,
contemplation.
Right.
Contemplation is the thinking. Rationalizing, thinking, contemplation.
Okay.
So that also has its role. But at the same time, this silent observation is the most crucial thing. Now, most of the people think that vipassana is merely, say you learn some theories from the book, and while meditating, once your mind calms down, I have to think about it. Things are impermanent, things are unsatisfactory, things are non-self, things are unsatisfactory, things are non-self, things are uncertain, things are impermanent. So likewise, they completely keep on thinking. So
that is wrong.
In the form of condition in the mind. But what Buddha recommend is keep your mind fairly quiet and unbiased, and have a kind of middle balance, and then allow the phenomena to manifest as their own itself. Exactly.
So yes,
then only we can get the proper idea, or then only we can get the proper picture. It is not that we make them impermanent. It is not that we make them unsatisfactory. Rather, if they are really impermanent, they have to show that behavior. So
yes, I think we all have made that mistake, you know?
Yeah. Not only, lay people, many monks also do that mistake.
Because what I'm understanding is that those are insights which are going to come out on their own.
On their own due to continuous observation, unbiased observation.
Yes.
Actually,
and due to cause.
Yeah, because while the observation, we should not have any preconceived idea. So our mind is not programmed like thinking that it is going to be impermanent. Not necessary. Because, through their behavior, what they are constantly showing is the impermanence. So that is their inherent nature. So in order to look at it, in order to understand it, we have to allow them to change, allow them to behave as they like. And we have to have a kind of a kind of impartial, unbiased, silent, well-concentrated, balanced mind. Then only the potential of insight is possible. Insights only arise on that mind, not in a biased or conditioned mind.
Yes, Bhante.
Yeah.
So just one very quick one is that when we are going into samadhi and our breath gets very fine, but we still can feel the breath arising and passing away very clearly.
Mm-hmm.
So that shows impermanence, isn't that right?
Yeah. We can look at it in that angle. So at the beginning, probably we may see breath as kind of a conceptual phenomenon, in breath, out breath, in breath, out breath. So still we are in the conceptual level. But later, once the mind has fully calmed down and all the perceptions have completely faded away, we can look at breath also. It is not no more a breath, and it is kind of a movement. It is moving,
yes,
so it's kind
right.
of, yeah. There are certain movements, they are rising and passing away. There is warmness, there is kind of coolness arising and passing away. So we are looking at, in a way, element characteristics in the breath.
And we can come to a conclusion as well, isn't it, Bhante?
Conclusion in the sense...
Now when I see this very clearly, arising and passing, then a new breath comes and goes. So then we can say, this is the impermanence that Buddha spoke about.
Yeah.
That he's not quite thinking, no?
Yes.
We are seeing things as they really are.
Exactly. When we see things as they really are, there's a kind of insight arise. So this
yes.
insight also may manifest like a couple of thoughts.
Yes.
So
yes.
it's a kind of
right.
immediate experience.
Yeah, well, every day when we do it, it has become like an experience.
No, I mean, not every day. I mean, as you are improving, I mean, it becomes more natural, isn't it? I mean,
it becomes less of an impact. It's a,
exactly.
It's like daily sort of something, but
yes.
you can see it.
Yes. Because you already has experienced it, and now
yes.
it's a kind of a confirmation.
Yeah. Thank you, Bhante.
Okay, welcome.
Bhante, one more question.
Yeah.
Dear Bhante, once someone achieves that silent mind through meditation, you advise to be vigilant on thought coming and going without labeling them. They come and go. Keep doing this continuously till the end of the session. This is what I have been doing every day in sitting and walking meditation. Also doing this during day times whenever I remember this is what we have to do. Having said so, sometimes when a family member tells something, I get in that pitfall instantly sometimes. Sometimes my mind recall that I have to avoid the situation and start looking at sensations or breath that help me to keep mind calm and avoid getting in arguments. Is this what we try to achieve and live with?
No, actually that also depends. Now, I mean, at this level, say you can say at the moment, say you are going through this sort of experience and you are trying to observe various phenomena, sensations, and you are trying to understand their behavior. So that is one level of the practice. But as you continue, there's another level that the mind may give up all these things and may find inner silence or complete freedom from all these different phenomena. So that is another level of the practice. So at that time, actually, even when family member tells something, the mind doesn't involve too much with it. So for example, you see something, it is just seeing. You hear something, it is just hearing. And you smell something, taste something, feel something, it is just feeling. And there is a thought coming to the mind, it is just thought. That's it. So the mental proliferation does not get activated. Mind likes to stay quiet. So this is a kind of a experience that yogis may encounter as they continue. As Buddha mentioned to Bahya Darucirya, Ditte Ditta Mattam Bhavishyati, Sute Sutta Mattam Bhavishyati, Mute Muta Mattam Bhavishyati, Vinyate Vinyata Mattam Bhavishyati. Seeing is just seeing, hearing is just hearing. And cognizing is just cognizing. So likewise, so the mind come to that level. I mean, it is not that you always have to, continue to carefully observe all the various phenomena and to understand the impermanent nature, unsatisfactory nature, non-self nature. I mean, so that is available at the beginning to very say fair amount of practice that is there. But once you come into the other level, then it is very much like the meditation happens rather than you struggling, rather than you purposely doing, the meditation happens. And it is more and more calmed down. And it is more and more relaxing. And there Buddha mentioned that you have to change your attitude from doing to let it happen. At the beginning, you are purposely doing, you are intentionally doing something. But at the latter stage, and the next stage, you allow things to happen. You accept things. And you keep the mind quiet. And you keep the mind unassociated. And not attached with anything in the world. So that is how Buddha mentioned, even in Satipatthana Sutta, for example, say, Samudaya Dhamma Anupassīva Kāyāsmiṃ Viharati. Why Dhamma Anupassīva Kāyāsmiṃ Viharati? So that indicates some amount of very, say, critical observation that you are understanding the rising nature of the certain phenomena, passing away nature of the certain phenomena, that involves a fair amount of critical observation. But later, Buddha mentioned, Anisthitocha viharati nachakinchiloki upadhyate. Now you stay keeping the mind unattached, not holding to anything in the world. So once it comes to that level, so that is kind of a shift in one's practice. Yeah.
Thank you,
Okay. Yeah. Any more questions or shall we wind up?
One last question. So, Bhante, in the sutta today, you talked about this tendency for mental proliferation to be the starting cause of, you know, the remaining, you know, feelings and craving and hatred and all that stuff. So, is there something that then causes the tendency for proliferation?
No, I didn't get the question, Jennifer.
Yeah, so earlier in one of your chart, you know, everything kind of, so so we started with, you know, why is there, you know, so much lack of peace, right?
Yes.
And we kept pushing back, and then we finally got to, okay, mental, this tendency for mental proliferation is kind of the root cause of all of the other things
before it.
And is there something that is causing this tendency for mm-hmm. proliferation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What's the root cause of that?
Yeah. So actually, to go back to that diagram, here in the Madhupindika Sutta, that is the other side, is also mentioned. So how, what is the genesis of this mental proliferation is also mentioned, where the more and more subtle aspects are explained there. So when your eye and the form comes together, the eye consciousness happen. When those three things happen again and again, the contact happens. Contact causes feeling. And that actually is common to everyone, even to the Buddha. So it's a kind of a causal relationship. And after that, we put our hand, we start to cognize, or rather we start to recognize. And once we recognize that, we perceive and we are thinking. Now the thinking happens, vitakka, thinking happens. So this thinking now leads to mental proliferation. So that is why I last time mentioned, so there's a interrelationship between this thinking and mental proliferation, and thinking and mental proliferation. It's a kind of an interrelationship. They are interdependent. There is a tendency to mentally proliferate, therefore we think. And when we are thinking, mental proliferation happens. And that tendency becomes strengthened. It's a kind of a vicious cycle. So these two, I mean, in this, that is why I have selected this sutta immediately after Madhupindika Sutta. This, you see, in the Madhupindika Sutta, it explains how thinking causes mental proliferation. That is one side. In this sutta, the tendency to proliferate is there as a result of thinking happens. The opposite direction. So that indicates, on the other hand, thinking and mental proliferation are interdependent. Because of the thinking, mental proliferation happens, and that tendency is strengthened. And when that strengthened, that tendency is there, further thinking is initiated.
Okay.
Yeah, so I mean, it's a very difficult situation in a way. So that is why we need fair amount of practice and kind of a systematic approach to solve the problem.
So Bhante, I'm always trying to differentiate between what is thinking and what is mental proliferation.
Yeah, so thinking is the very few thoughts. I mean, say you think about your knees, and couple of thoughts, and done, finished. Yeah. Now assume that now your mind calmed down. Suppose after another minute, you again think about your mother. Okay, now a couple of thoughts, finished. You can't consider that as mental proliferation, because there are intermittent intervals are there, and there are sort of, I mean, the thinking doesn't continue on and on. When it comes to mental proliferation, you can't stop. There are no gaps.
Yeah.
There are no gaps. So the mind goes on and on, thinking in one direction, thinking in another direction, thinking in another direction. So the mind itself recognizes different paths, various paths, and the mind is obsessed now. Obsessive thinking. So that is the mental proliferation. Now you can't stop, and it is not under your control now. That is what we call as mental proliferation.
Thank you, Bhante. This is great. Thank you so much.
Okay, then we'll stop for today. And there's another question coming here. Can you read it, Jennifer? But we have just 1 minute.
Let's see if it is a question. So thank you so much for the wonderful explanation, Bhante. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So when we keep doing what we do now, will ultimately lead to that level on just watching what's happening without making any effort, and the mind will just stay as it is, and mental proliferation will not happen. Mind will stay still, unshaken mind.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. We can conclude like that. Yes. Okay. Then we have actually come to the end of the session. So we actually have participated in Dhamma Sutta teaching, and then we participated in Dhamma discussion. With that, we were able to accumulate some merits. So let's share these merits by reciting traditional verses. Ittavata ca amhehi sambhataṁ punya sampadaṁ sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ittavata ca amhehi sambhataṁ punya sampadaṁ sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata chamhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Akasattha jabummattha deva naga mahindika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu sasanang. Akasattha jabummattha deva naga mahindika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu desanam. Akasattha ca bhummattha deva naga mahindika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu mamparam. Idam vo nyati nam hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idam vo nyati nam hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idam vo nyati nam hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamu satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamu satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamu satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.